welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. In this series of podcasts, a multidisciplinary team of specialists, plus a former care partner, share their perspectives on the impact and behavioural symptoms of agitation in Alzheimer's dementia, including discussion on diagnosis criteria and best practice management. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Lundbeck. This activity is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME in collaboration with the Gerontological Society of America, GSA. In this podcast, an advocate for individuals and families living with Alzheimer's and other dementias interviews a former Alzheimer's dementia care partner to share personal insights of how agitation impacts not only the person living with dementia, but everyone around them.
Hello and welcome. My name is Jen Hedis, and I'm the Director of Strategic Alliances at the Gerontological Society of America. And I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Dr. Bonnie Berman. Bonnie is a former care partner for her mom, who was living with dementia, and she's the president of the Ohio Council for Cognitive Health. And today we're going to discuss the impact and burden of agitation in Alzheimer's dementia. Thanks so much for joining me, Bonnie.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
It's a delight to always to talk with you and learn from your experiences. Bonnie, I want to start with just asking, what was the impact of agitation in Alzheimer's dementia on your mom? What kind of behaviors did you see, and how did that affect her and her quality of life?
Well, Jen, that's such a good question, and I think I'm going to answer it a little differently than you would expect. And that is, the most important impact of agitation was, I truly believe in retrospect, that she didn't feel loved. Because her agitation was a way to express her pain or what she was going through. And when the rest of us did not respond appropriately or to help her, I sense this that she had a sense of, don't you people care about me anymore? And that was the most tragic part of the agitation, believe it or not.
Bonnie, you shared with me once a story about when your mom didn't recognize you and how troubled she was, but how troubled you were and how you tried to convince her that you were Bonnie. Tell us a little about that experience for you both.
Well, I can't speak for her, but I can tell you, and I've never told anyone this before, that I ended up in therapy because of it. That it was so incredibly traumatic that I did not know how to respond when she didn't recognize me. And so I made it worse. And that's actually why I have dedicated the rest of my career to making sure that people understood that they have a role to play in agitation and other symptoms that come along with dementia. I believe, and I still believe, so maybe the therapy wasn't successful, that I was the problem. But I do think that there's so much that care partners can do, and I wasn't doing them. And my guidance now to people is to help them understand. For example, did it matter that she didn't know who I was? If she knew I brought her joy, who did it matter to? It mattered to me, but it wasn't about me. It was about her. And so it's changing that frame to what really matters that is so very important.
So what matters most? But what I want to go back to, Bonnie, in your answer are two other questions that I got as a result of that answer. And the first was, you said your mom had different behaviors that were part of that agitation. What were some of those behaviors?
Well, interesting, Jen, they aren't the behaviors that folks often think about. People think about, I think, the aggressive behavior. She did not have aggressive behaviors, but she had a sense of restlessness, such as pacing, repeating the same motions over and over again. And what I saw on her face was that these symptoms were a way to express her distress. And everyone expresses distress in a very different way.
So the theme I'm hearing there is behaviors as a form of communication and communicating
yes.
need.
Well, and when you are communicating need, Jen, we as care partners, and you know, I define care partners as very, very broadly. Anybody can be a care partner, whether you just see someone in a grocery store or not, that when you see them trying to communicate, it becomes our responsibility to say, what are they trying to communicate? What is this pain? And what perhaps did I do or could I have done differently to either prevent this or de-escalate it?
So that brings me to the other question I thought about when I heard your answer there, and that was, how did you learn those strategies that did work that helped her to de-escalate? Was it really reflection on previous situations? Tell us kind of the strategies you used and then how those impacted you and her.
I think the strategies are all lumped into one phrase, which is it's person-centered. It's knowing who the person is. And the only way care partners, both formal care partners and informal care partners, such as families, know how to respond is if the person has the diagnosis as early as possible. Because with an early diagnosis, we're able to understand what matters most to that person and to be able to think about it. And oftentimes with what matters most, people think about the big things like end-of-life decisions. But that's not what I'm referencing here. I'm referencing that if my mother was going to go outside, please, please make sure she's wearing her rain bonnet. She even slept in that rain bonnet to make sure her hair would be fine the next day. And so one of the key times of agitation for her was when she was going to go outside, but they didn't give her her hair bonnet. I know that sounds silly, but the agitation started with a segment of agitation started with the hair bonnet incident.
So getting to know not only what makes life worth living for that person, but what's their usual routine? What's important to them? What's their normal time to get up, how they go outside, whether they like I always use the example of, there's a question of, do you like pets? Well, I love my cats and dogs, but I'm not a fan of the birds. So please don't bring the visiting birds to see me if I'm in your care home. So all about learning what's important to them.
Well, and so, Jen, I want to add to that, it's what's important to them. But it's also our knowing how to make sure we have built upon their strengths so that if someone was going to, for example, make sure my mother was wearing the hair bonnet, why not let her put it on? Isn't that just she feels some sense of control? And so it's a matter of knowing the person well and what their what means something to them.
Very, very good. How did you learn those strategies? Who was it? A care team? Was it other care partners in your life? How did you learn the strategies you used?
I think one of the things that I have learned over time is that if we flatten the hierarchy, we can all learn so much. Meaning, in long-term care or care for people with dementia, it is the people who are closest who really know what's going on, and we need to listen to them. And so what I learned to do the most is not from books, it was from my mother's direct care workers and the people who really understood her. I'll give you a wonderful example is that oftentimes in long-term care, we have great turnover over the stress of bathing, because it really is a very difficult situation. But what her care partner, her formal care partner knew was that my mother had always, always wanted to lose that last 5 pounds. And regardless of what a surveyor might have thought if they had walked in, she would say to my mother, "Miriam, it looks like you've lost weight. Let's put you on the scale." And of course, women who are listening know we'll even take our earrings off to lose some of that weight. And so it was very easy to get her clothes off because they knew her. And it stopped the agitation, and it was the nurse's aide or the direct care worker was so proud to be able to share that, but it only worked for my mother. It wasn't a matter of something that you would do for everybody. And that's the message here. And that is, you want to empower people to say, well, if this worked for Miriam, maybe that works for Jane.
Right. I think that's a great message to close on. Person-centered care and what matters most. Thanks for joining me, Bonnie.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget there are 4 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.